I'm very passionate about babies' cognitive development. Like I try to always use this, the toys that are appropriate for their age.
We were singing and dancing, and I did superhero training. So I'm as fast as the Flash. I am as strong as Superman. I can't yet fly. Jacob told me I had to work on that technique this morning.
And then parents will come to me, like, oh my God, my daughter just set it up by herself. Like, she loves doing it now.
Yes. Now, personally, as a child, what was your favorite play activity?
Oh.
Welcome back to Sensory Play Reimagined, a podcast where we explore how sensory play can help unlock your child's development and well-being potential. I'm your host, Rachel Rothman. I'm a toy expert and mom of three. Today, we have on an incredible PT from the Hospital of Special Surgery to join us and talk all things physical fitness and play. Hey, I am so excited to introduce you to Magda. I have such affection for her knowledge, her personality, everything. So without further ado, and without me butchering all of the acronyms that come after your name, Magda, who heads up pediatric therapy at the Hospital for Special Surgery, do you mind giving kind of a brief snapshot of your educational and kind of professional background before we dive in?
Sure. I have to correct you, Rachel. I don't lead the department anymore. I am just one of the clinical leads, so the people who are mentoring and helping other therapists. But I've been a physical therapist for over 25 years. It's kind of hard to believe.
You look 25.
The acronyms means, so I have a PhD in pediatric science, and my focus of the dissertation was infants with congenital muscular torticollis, which in short is the condition that affects babies quite often. And they are born with shortening of one muscle in the neck, which causes the tilt of the head. Parents who are expecting babies often don't know about it, so I'm super happy to mention it on your podcast.
I was gonna say we could pause and we can say I was one of those parents that I had a child with torticollis, and you know, I was very grateful that I was connected to you when I had a child who was just weeks of age, so that I could better understand what it meant. I thought you were gonna quiz me on the spot and ask me, you know, the definition of torticollis, and I was gonna say the shortening and tightening of muscles on one side, and everything that kind of goes along with that, and the therapeutic kind of interventions that you help support my family with. So yes, that, you know, you obviously start with infancy. You know, you met my children when they were just weeks of age. And then kind of how long do you stay with the kids? Like up until what age?
I think about 2-3 years old. I think I remember working on the running, jumping, and ball skills, which we want to talk about today.
Yes, all of those incredible things. And then with your practice, kind of what ages do you work with?
I see babies as young as a few days old, but I also love working with teenagers and young adults. If the child is born with some kind of disability that they carry through to the adulthood, I often have a soft spot for, like, you know, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, the kids who don't start going to college, but they still need some support. And there's not that many places for them when they grow up. You know, they're kind of coming from this wonderful, loving environment where we love them, adore them for many years. You know, I work with them for many years and see them grow up. But then when they become adults, there's not that many places to support them.
Fortunate but true. And they're very lucky to have you and kind of the team that are supporting them. So maybe we can start kind of at the kind of core of what it is that you're doing. So you are helping, you know, like, I think very in my head when I kind of first came to it, a PT was working on gross motor and an OT was working on fine motor. But then I kind of unlocked all of the hidden meaning behind it. And that's not, you know, like, that's a very, very high level way of thinking of it, but not the most accurate. So can you kind of explain, like, what your body of work is supporting kind of in terms of movement and development and,
mm-hmm. you know? Awesome question. It's always very confusing when you have a young baby and you come to pediatric rehabilitation center, and like, parents often ask, what's the difference between PT and OT, right? Physical therapy versus occupational therapy. And truthfully, in the beginning, there's a lot of overlap when the babies are very small. So we really are working on the motor development, right? Like either the arm development, legs, core, baby's movement, right? Teaching them to lift up the head, to roll from their bed to the belly, sitting up. But once the babies become about 7-8 months old, there is a little bit of diversion. I know, Rachel, exactly how you said. The occupational therapist focuses a little more on the fine motor skills. So baby grasping a rattle, putting coins in the piggy bank, right? Little things more than fine motor. And we, as a physical therapist, work more on the balance and sitting, which allows the baby to play with their hands and use them for play. But there continue to be still a lot of overlap because, right, I will use the toys that facilitate fine motor skills, right? And then the occupational therapy will still work in sitting, which kind of strengthens the physical therapy goals of gross motor development. I think the really big, like, it becomes much more obvious when you, let's say, think about 2 or 3 year old who will need, you know, then when the kiddos are getting ready to go to school and learn more about holding a crayon, cutting a paper, drawing a straight line. That's like a clearly OT goal.
Right.
And exactly how I said, at this age, I'll be definitely focusing much more on holding a ball, throwing a ball, catching a ball, running.
Coordination and balance and gait and walking and those
right.
types.
Right. But more like the gross motor movements, right? As opposed to, I always joke in my session when kids want to sit down, I'm like, no, we never sit down in physical therapy. That's occupational therapy. That's when you sit down and focus on holding a crayon and cutting and more like, your body is more, right? As you said, sensory, right? Your body is more still.
Yes.
And focusing on using your hands versus with physical therapy, it's more like those big movements, right? Moving through space, balancing on a balance beam, jumping, running, you know, learning both skills such as kicking, throwing. So then it's like very obvious. But
you were the fun. You were always the fun. The kids always. I think part of, you know, you even said it while you were describing it, you were talking about a lot of like interactivity with the toys that the kids are doing and making it playful. I mean, my children loved coming. It was joyful. And I don't mean this in like, there's no way that I can properly convey the combination of joy, passion, and like just intuition that you have with the child. Like I would watch you. And you would just so adeptly, even like without them realizing it. So first they're on the kneeling, you know, for instance, and just the way in which you would help move their body slightly so that their core is engaged. And like there were just all these different things that you were able to do with just like slight movements of their body to help facilitate kind of that next stage. Do you mind kind of like just talking through that, like just like your practice of working with a child? Kind of particularly at that age, so important to teach the parent because they're, you know, you always said it to me, you're like, you're the one with the child the most, you know, you're the one who's going to be facilitating this. And you took the time to kind of instruct me. I can never do it exactly the same or, you know, as adeptly as you. But, you know, you had such a way of empowering me to feel like I can also help support kind of the growth and the development of what was happening.
I think, Rachel, thank you for like saying it. I think you're like that's my passion. And that's what I, few things that you said, like I always joke that what I get to do at work is I play all day long, right? Because the children, the difference between pediatric therapists and adult therapists, right? We still want to work on the same goals, regardless. We work on strengthening the muscles, lengthening the muscles, learning balance. But what the pediatric therapists have to bring into it is the creativity, right? To make it fun so kids don't realize they actually are doing an exercise, right? So and like one example I use all the time, like, you know, if you go to the adult therapist, they're going to say, okay, Rachel, I need you to do 3 sets, you know, of 10 squats, right? We're going to strengthen your legs. But for the child, right, I will probably use a piggy bank or some kind of like shape sorter, right? We put these shapes on the ground and have them get one at a time and put in the container that's higher up, right? So it's a lot of it's about having a fun toy that the child likes, right? That's kind of one of the challenges, right? Because every child is different and some kids need a little more motivations than others. Setting an activity in a way that I'm getting what I'm working on, let's say strengthening the legs or core, but the child doesn't know it, right? They think they're playing. So making it
they
fun.
Are. They were genuinely playing, you know? It wasn't even like, let's let them think they're playing. It was like, no, these kids were playing. Like my kids were having a great time. And that, you know, obviously it was in a very, you know, a more regimented way to get the outcome that you needed. But it was definitely playful. It was definitely fun. And like my kids who in general would kind of tire out from doing kind of physical exertion on their
faster.
But when you, you know, engage them in a way that, like you said, they were distracted by the kind of the fun element of what was going on. They didn't realize that they were doing it in the same capacity.
And I just want to add, right? Because you asked about the parents, right?
Yeah.
And I right? Like, I'm so passionate about helping parents because I know I am parent of three daughters too, you know, who grew up, now they're young adults, but I know how much work it is just to kind of keep your head above water, right? So my...
Magda saw me in the thick of it. Magda saw me, three kids under three. I was in it.
Yes. So like that, so we try to make it playful, right, for you as well, right? Like, I just don't want to give you more to do, but I want you kind of change a little bit how you're already playing with your kids, right? So it becomes more structured and more goal-oriented, whatever we are working on at the moment, you know, regarding the child's age and difficulties they're facing. I don't want to add more to your schedule. I just want to change a little bit how you're doing things already, right? And kind of incorporate them throughout the day. Knowing, right, exactly what you said, like if a child comes to see me 1 hour a week or 2 hours, there's another, you know, 12 hours that are awake that day, right? Like there's so much more opportunities to help them just whatever you're doing at home, right? I see myself more as a kind of teacher or supporter, right? Like how can I support you as a family, the child and the mom and dad, or right, whatever the mother of family, what yeah. with the kids at home.
Right.
So that's but- huge for me.
It's funny, as you say, like you gave me such simple things to do. So my daughter had torticollis and it was very persistent on the right side. So you were like, just speak to her on the left side. She should always be, you know, like to be focusing on the movement kind of in that direction and to help kind of facilitate it. So like even just like the placement of her car seat in the car so that she would be, you know, forced to turn that way. All these little things, you know, and just.
And all adds up throughout the day.
Yeah, and like where her crib was placed, you know, doing it so like against the wall was the boring side that she never wanted to look at, but like everything in the room that was like fun and engaging was on the side that she would be, you know, more likely to turn to. So helping with, I always forget, you're going to pronounce it correctly for me, but flathead, what's the word?
Yeah, the medical word is plesiocephaly.
Thank you. I was going to definitely butcher that one. So I appreciate you taking that one on for me. So like just things that I could be mind, like I didn't even know that that was a thing and you
right.
made me aware. And I was able to do these like small changes within my household that made it, you know, easier and better. And, you know, I know when a child is an infant, you know, we're all told tummy time, tummy time, tummy time. And I remember once you were just like, holding the baby on you and she's like, you know, lifting her neck up to you, that's tummy time, you know, she's now on her tummy. Just like very simple things that I could be incorporating and, you know, moving the toy just a little bit further away or
exactly.
you know, all these different, like you pick up on these very tangible things that I was able to do and implement in my house. And then, you know, I later had a child who didn't have torticollis and it mm-hmm. benefited from it. You know, they were all things that kind of just were helping support the natural development of a child. I feel like, and I know that you recognize this too, like we're living in a society where we're just moving away from kind of the natural way our bodies were moving and doing things and mm-hmm. now are more stagnant in general. You know, like even a child, this is something I know that you're a big proponent of, like getting them up and moving, because now we live in a world where they're significantly more sedentary during the, you know, like there's less recess, there's less playtime.
More computers, more laptops, you know, more devices.
Right. You know, and we're not sitting in a way that is like out in the fields and moving and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of the way in which our bodies were designed to kind of be active. Do you have any kind of tips in kind of for, you can kind of work through the ages and or pick an age around things that parents can be mindful of? And or is there like a critical age you feel like, okay, parents, like, listen up. This is when it's like really important to be mindful of it, obviously across all ages, but kind of any advice or tips for making sure you're keeping your kids active and moving?
Yes, I do. I'm so glad you asked that question.
Like, I can talk for hours on this, Rachel.
It's been great.
Yes.
Few things. I want to like kind of start by saying there is this model in motor development, which I found very like kind of easy to understand and really makes sense and kind of explains how each level of baby, toddler, you know, preschooler development is a building block for like next level of physical activity. So Jane Clark is the scientist who came up with it, and it's called the mountain of movement development. So it's kind of imagine like a triangle, right, or a mountain that the base is like really the like first year of life, when babies I know we have this perception as parents, educators, is a misconception that children kind of just develop on their own. It's like a magical process that happens, and we kind of get that from the fact that when we observe young babies, they do progress through their skills. Like it seems like we don't have to help them, right? Like they are learning to roll on their own. They are learning to sit on their own, unless they have some delay. But like healthy baby, like it seems the process is just unfolding on its own. And it's a misconception because it's kind of both, right? They have this pattern of development that's kind of predetermined, but if we don't provide like an rich environment of toys, right? If we don't provide an environment that they can pull on up something to practice standing, it won't be as seamless. They will need help. And that misconception is even more, I think, embedded in our in parents' thinking, society thinking for kiddos who are 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, that also that those ball skills, the jumping, the will kind of develop on its own. But I think the great example to kind of think of is, let's say a child grows in a house that doesn't have a ball. And then how will they learn to catch the ball or throw a ball and kick a ball? And it's very interesting because the test we administer to kids to measure where they are on the motor development, they have a lot of ball skills. You know, like, are you able to catch? Is the child able to catch the ball? How far can they throw a ball? How far they can kick a ball? But how will they learn it if they never tried it before?
Right.
So I think it's like really fascinating to think about a little more in depth. And, you know, the children who come to physical therapy, those are the children who have some kind of difficulty, right, with their motor movement, with their balance. So often that's called now, for last maybe 50 years, it's called developmental coordination disorder. Before they were kind of labeled kids who were like, you know, they had just hard time playing sports or running on the playground. Those were kiddos who were like more shy on the playground, or they weren't really engaging with their friends, right? Because they were like not sure of themselves. They didn't feel like they didn't have good self-esteem about moving around the gym the playground, because they felt scared of it. So really what I'm trying to say, like each of those things, you know, build on each other. And then when the child is, let's say, 7, 8, or 10 years old, and parents are signing them for sports, right? Like now those other core fundamental motor skills, yeah, like the running, the jumping, kicking a ball, throwing, catching, those are like locomotion skills, which is the running, jumping, and then balancing one leg, and then ball skills such as catching, throwing, using maybe a racket, you know, like for like preparing in the future for maybe playing tennis or lacrosse. So those are called fundamental muscles, fundamental motor skills, and they kind of, children work on them from about one to seven years old. So that's like the second level of that mountain of movement. And then from 7 and higher, those are like more specialized, they become more specialized, right? So this is when kids kind of decide, okay, I'm going to be a soccer player, or I'm going to be a lacrosse player, right? And they kind of take those fundamental motor skills they've learned so far, and then they become like more refined, right, in whatever sport they will pursue. But if the child at 2 or 3 years old is not, you know, is not like a motor star, right? He's the child who's a little shy, their balance is a little off, they trip often. If we don't address it, they will never become that, like, you know, great lacrosse player, because you have to like build on those fundamental motor skills. But if we help them, they will. They just need practice.
I wanted to kind of dive into that a bit. So you also obviously come from a neurodevelopmental background as well, and kind of help support it through that. So, like, yes, it's the motor coordination. Sometimes it might be physical. Sometimes there may also be neurological or like processing components, right, to it. So again, as a parent, are there kind of clues or signs, like you mentioned, they may be tripping, falling, they may not be as great at catching the ball. Is there kind of a point at which a parent should say, like, there's something here I should be doing? Like, is there something they could be doing at home? Is there a moment where they're like, oh, it, you know, I, you, what is the parent's role in that? Like, once they can kind of see, oh, I have a child who's tripping a lot, or I have a child who's having difficulty with this.
Well, Rachel, it depends on the age, right? I think, like, again, like, first year of life is kind of, I think, like, easier, because parents are so in tune with the milestones and they have their app on the phone, and you see a pediatrician every 1 or 2 months, right, for the checking. So I think my advice will be, I feel like parents often like feel in their gut that maybe their baby needs a little help, and they go to a pediatrician, and the pediatrician are like, oh, let's wait another 2, 3 months. And then see what happens if they catch up on their own. And my advice would be, even if this is like nothing, just come in for even one assessment. You know, like I can show you, any pediatric therapist can show you, I can reassure you things are going great, and they just can show some activities to that home, right? Or if there truly is a concern, that you're addressing it early as opposed to waiting another 3 months and baby kind of falls even more behind.
Like you said, everything is building on top of
the other thing.
The sooner you kind of address it, the better.
And then, as you said, Rachel, like, you know, everything is interconnected. So like babies, I'm very passionate about babies' cognitive development. Like I try to always use this, the toys that are appropriate for their age, right? Like I'm not only playing and working on motor development, but they still incorporate the fine motor skills. You talk about colors of the toy, you know, what are we doing? Are we going up and down, right? You incorporate a little bit of speech and cognition always. So whenever there's like something that you worry, just come and see the appropriate discipline, you know. And I find the parents sometimes have to like, you know, be more firm with the pediatrics. Like, I'm really worried. I'd rather not wait. Let me come in now, because they all interact with each other. Like a child who doesn't walk as soon as, you know, this is another kind of the big discussion, but the typical expected age for kids to walk used to be 10 to 15 months. And now because we see kids more in the containers, you know, like sitting at the swing, sitting in the bouncer, not loving a tummy time, the pediatric society actually increased that normal age to 18 months, that's kind of within normal range. For the pediatric physical point of view, I think we should address the movement. So like not change the milestone, make sure the kids are moving, you know, right. Take them out of the container. And I think you said that, Rachel, right? Like the best place for babies is on the floor. You know, just playing, not in a swing, not in the bouncer seat, not in the activity center inside of it, because then they're not really using their muscles enough. You really right. want them to practice to get stronger. For older kids, Rachel, just to go with what you said, like, I think often parents will like, when you go on a playground with your child and you see, oh, kids his age are doing more, right? Like, I would like to say again, like bring up to the, you know, pediatrician, like, would it be okay if I, you know, have my child evaluated, maybe at least it might end up being just one session and me saying, you know, giving you some tips.
Right.
Or it mean like, you know, the child would come once a week. I often say like, nothing is really wrong, but let's think of me as a personal trainer for your child. You know, we just helping build his competence, right? Feeling of empowerment that, oh, I can go on a playground and, you know, climb that slide and be safe. But they might need to practice it with me first.
Right.
Before they build that confidence to then engage with their friends.
I remember when my daughter first climbed up the stairs with like, and just like I'm like crying, thinking of it, like the pride that she felt in doing it and then feeling so much more empowered to try it and explore and, you know, be more, she was more confident in trying other things.
Right.
You know, like it built kind of the foundation for her to be like, I can do this. I want to do this. This is like, wow, like how empowering is this? Like she had greater independence and she was excited by it, as opposed to being apprehensive by it. And
exactly, right. And then she does it on her own, right? Then you can stop the kids. If the kids love climbing naturally. It's like they're, right? When the baby starts walking, like the first thing they do, they try to go up the stairs and down the stairs. You have to block them, right? Because so they get hurt.
It's funny as you were describing, kind of like creating an environment that helps to facilitate this. So making sure you have a lot of balls, you know, in the house, different sizes, you know, even.
Yeah, so like some of the things like super simple, I can recommend for parents of kids who are maybe 2, 3 years old, that may have difficulty with balance or jumping. Like having a simple balance beam, you know, bought from Amazon, some few hurdles, some stepping stones, and setting it up in a fun way.
I'm smiling because I have it all in the house still from the days.
Yeah, not expensive, that's simple. And then parents will come to me, it's like, oh my God, my daughter just set it up by herself. Like she loves doing it now.
Yes. No, they still love doing it. So like it was almost ingrained in them from a young age, and like we've continued doing it. And we constantly have like obstacle courses in the house with all of the different props. But I love kind of the concept of like that, I think you called it
foundational.
Yeah, the mountain of movement and how it's like really foundational and you're continually kind of building on it. But if you don't have that foundation, how can you have the expectation that they're going to be able to do something more sophisticated before they've kind of really mastered the kind of base skills? educational.
Yeah, like when you think to like with the Sad Olympics, right? Like those are the kids who like reach the peak of the mountain, right? Most of us will never reach it, and that's okay, right? But like we all need to have.
You all have different strengths. Mine is not going to end in the Olympics. It's okay.
Like that's like a little tip of the peak, right? But like that they all had to go through the same skills. We all went through learning to walk as babies, right? And running and playing. Like it's so important to have those fundamental motor skills to build upon. And that's like that whole concept of that mountain, right? Like the kids who are in high school already and playing like really specialized sports, they needed to have that foundation first. Like they couldn't get there without having all those things before.
And I love even, it's a term we all use, but like playing the sports, like it is still play, you know? Yeah. So that's their form of play, and it's still engaging and fun and getting them moving. Are there certain activities, you know, I know you had also shown me like a handful of yoga moves, and my kids still, you know, Gracie was leading a yoga class this morning for all of us. She's gotten very advanced. I am not able to do half of the things that she's able to do. Her body moves in very impressive ways. And I know for us, you know, it's a lot of yoga, a lot of, you know, dance parties. Are there other activities that kind of like as a family that you would promote or kind of, you know, you also mentioned kind of the obstacle courses. That's something that we still do. Are there other kind of easy things that families can be doing that are fun and playful and engaging, but also kind of promoting the motor development?
Absolutely. I just want to add what you said kind of sparkle a thought I want to really share with everybody as well, that we know through research that babies or children and who are active and doing a lot of active things become active adults, right? So it also promotes their healthy lifestyle. So like what you're doing, Rachel, right, with your husband right now with the kiddos, like you kind of bring in what you did as a child. I think it's like, very so much. Like,
Magda knows the whole family. She's seen us all. We're all very playful, all very active.
Exactly. But like think about, so like, it's like thinking about a really big scale by promoting the movements of being on the playground, right? Taking some simple motor classes, you know, sports classes. I always say to parents, even you come see me once a week, like make sure your child participates in like, you know, some kind of sport class or ballet, whatever they like, right? It doesn't really matter. Rock climbing, you have this beautiful rock climbing wall behind you. I find that rock climbing is so rewarding for kids and they love it, right? They get a little higher each time and they really work the entire body. It's like concentration, you're working your upper extremity, lower extremity, your core.
Visual motor
planning, and then your self-esteem, right? Like each time you go a little higher, you feel good about it.
Right.
So like that's like a big message, right? The children who are active growing up become active adults, and the active adults are great parents, right? Because now they're gonna kind of do it again with their own kiddos. So like really, that's about doing, it's not nothing extra, right? Just doing a lot of things with your kids. As I said, I think ball is like cost $10 or $20 or like free in a, you know, 99 cent store. And it keeps on giving. You can play so many things. And even a young baby, when they start walking, you know, I said to parents, I'd give them a ball. They're going to hold it. They're going to drop it. Then they have to squat down to pick it up. Stand up. They're going to drop it again. It's going to roll away and they have to run after it. And it's just like a play that keeps on going. You know, we talk about playground, going on little hikes, right? Being just in the park on an even terrain, that's a challenge for balance and strength. So I would just say minimize time in front of TV, right? Minimize time in front of a computer and maximize time like being playful and, as you said, doing obstacle courses, going for a walk, going to the playground, and maybe being in one or two classes a week when there is, you know, more focus on motor movement, on movement through space, right? Like, of course, there are lots of classes about reading and music classes, but like to make sure there's at least one class or two times a class, twice a week class that the child gets to experience moving through the space. Like those are like old sensory gyms or gyms when you have all kinds of equipment you have to climb, right? Like the child is using their whole body.
Right. I love the new one in the city. I don't know if you've been to a complete playground.
No, I haven't heard of it.
Massive. And it's like it's sensory based. It's a really fantastic center. And they're very supportive of children of all different needs. So yes, you should. It was funny as you were saying it. It was also, you know, bringing up for me just like we, you know, as they've gotten older, I went through a pandemic with three young children. We did have a little bit more screen time than I probably would have initially anticipated or kind of wanted, but we were mindful about it. So, you know, we were doing what like My son loves to do superhero training on the YouTube. So he's doing like highly physical and engaged activities. And that'll be kind of his screen time. So, you know, being mindful about the actual usage of screen time in a way that like I'm still able to do the things that I need to do and, you know, keep everything running and whatever have you. And sometimes I need some moments and they're all doing I'll send you the video later, but they're all watching the TV, but it was physical movement and activity. So whether it's, you know, the cosmic yoga, which
I wanted to mention that we're going back to yoga, right? The cosmic yoga is great too.
Yes, it's really fantastic. And you know, a handful of different ones, but like recognizing, okay, you can still utilize these things and you don't need to feel, you know, don't sit there and kind of beat yourself up about it. We live in a world where it's a reality. But being kind of a little bit more mindful about the choices that you are doing, you know, so my kids know if it's in the morning, it's got to be a movement-based one and they'll immediately go and pick it or a music one for dance. So like those are their options in the morning and, you know, that it's kind of set. And that's what we were doing this morning. So we were singing and dancing and I did superhero training. So I'm as fast as the Flash. I am as strong as Superman. I can't yet fly. Jacob told me I had to work on that technique this morning. But it was fun. You know, it was an engaging and playful way for them to be moving and getting their body kind of like ready for the day. And, you know, I kind of needed a few moments to get things ready. And, you know, it worked for everybody in a way that I felt they were still benefiting without kind of realizing that they were.
Yeah. Love it.
Okay, so, you know, a simple balance beam, you kind of talked about like a handful of other toys. Are there other like open-ended toys or kind of just other ways that parents can facilitate kind of play in the space? Obviously, when they're little, they don't need a lot of space. You know, you need a ground and, you know, maybe a few items for them to, or, you know, a parent to kind of engage with. Are there other items that you have found kind of helpful for setting up kind of foundationally success for them to build upon?
Yes. So, I'm actually not going to add equipment, but I like, you know, if you have a balance beam, I'm a preparing remember, Rachel, like I just don't give a child balance beam just to walk back and forth, but I might add a puzzle piece, you know, like have pieces of a puzzle on one end and the bags for the puzzle on the other end, right? So they go with one piece each time. So it has a purpose. It's not just about, you know, walking back and forth, but you add something. If the child likes drawing, I might just use crayons and paper, you know, crayons on one side of the balance beam or the obstacle course you build.
Right.
And the paper is on the other side, then we're drawing a card for mommy or we're drawing, you know, daddy's birthday is coming up. So we're doing something for daddy. So giving a purpose, so it's not just like mindless walking, but it's like, again, playful, right? Like, okay, they don't even realize they're working on stepping over hurdles, walking on the balance beam. I add sometimes just adding steps, like if you have any, like something the child can, like step stop, stepping up and down, right? Adding it into obstacle course, you're strengthening their legs each time they step up and down.
Right.
So I think my advice kind of to answer, it's not about getting more things. It's actually those things are super simple. It's literally, you know, for sports, we need a ball, pair of shoes, right? Like the kids go play soccer or play for tennis, you need a racket. But before that, you're just having like simple sports equipment then or dance, right? If the girls might love dancing or boys might love dancing or martial arts.
Yes.
All of those things will benefit them and all of it will gonna keep adding up. To answer your question, like I think the big thing is like creating some kind of environment that there is not just about doing the exercise, but you know, it's completing the puzzle. We're doing, we're making a drawing. We're putting things in a container, you know, just to make it even more fun and rewarding.
Right. No, I love that. I'm laughing because we were literally doing that the other day. It's Jesse's birthday coming up, and so we do. We take turns. So like they'll do it, then they'll go and do their obstacle. And while they're doing their obstacle, I'm adding to it. And we kind of take turns while we're doing it in a way that.
Have them part of it too, like the creating it, right? Like, what do we want to add? Let's give them choices, right? Give kiddos choices. Should we add the hurdles or should we add stepping stones? Should we make it straight or should we make it in a circle? So they like are part of the creating, right? The fun activity. And I think having your siblings, like you do it with your kids together, right? Like adds a little level of competition and having fun together. Like it's just fun family time, right? It's not exercise time. It's a fun family
time. I was not following the rules properly last night though. They had created something and they're like, Mom, that is not how you do it. You're not going to be able to play. And I'm like, I'm really trying to understand all the different rules. You had touched kind of upon, you know, they all feed into each other. Do you mind kind of talking through, like, I think people think physical activity is good physically for your body, but do you mind speaking through kind of like it's good for cognition? It's like all the different elements kind of touching upon just through physical activity.
Yeah. You know, I think that's well known for many years. I remember that when I was a child, my parents would tell me, you know, if you go exercise, you're going to, you know, make time for exercise or for play because you're going to do better at school, right? You're going to, like, your mind will have be, you get more blood flow, you get more endorphins, right? You are more likely to sit still, right? Because you got those jitters out. So that's, I think that's really well known and recognized, but it also helps by doing the, by playing the way we describe it, like adding the puzzle, adding some kind of, you know, drawing, right? You adding fine motor skills, you adding cognitive skills, right? You may, you know, look, the older kids, I will play a hangman, right? That's like, what words is here? So like you're using even skills they have from school, you intertwine it all together. One, it goes also back to when I was saying, like, you know, I don't want kids to start walking later and say it's okay, because the walking through space allows them so much more learning, right? Like they're moving through space when they start walking. They can see so much more when they're upright. So like that's the, all the cognitive learning that happens, right? When they navigate the space, can access toys that are higher up, play with them. So they all kind of all work together. Another kind of part of this kind of like interrelationship of things, right? The kids who are more active, they're more competent in the sports, but there's also this idea of perceived motor competence. So that means, you know, like there's this objective motor competence, like if therapist or mommy watches me and they know how I'm good I am at something, but there is this perceived motor competence, which not surprisingly, boys always have a little higher than girls, and then in relationship to their skills, you know, so like boys will always think I'm really great at this. But we might say, maybe you need to work on it a little bit more. But that, and then
science, you know, this all science here. This is all science backed.
Yes. This is based on research, actually.
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
And the girls might, like older girls might kind of underestimate.
I don't want Jesse to tell me, you know, we're just saying this.
I have articles to back it up. And then girls are more likely to underestimate their skills.
Right.
But why is this important? Because that perceived motor competence, if somebody feels, oh, you know, regardless, like we can say someone's like pretty average in playing soccer, let's say, right? But if I'm the person, the child feels like I'm not so good at playing soccer, all my friends are better, they're much less likely to engage in that sport, right? Because they don't. And then kiddos who are really feeling strong about their skills, even though their skills might be average, are actually more likely to engage in the sport and actually get better at the sport. So I find that really fascinating, that that idea of a perceived motor competence. It's all kind of, again, works together, like a fitness, lifetime witness, motor competence, perceived motor competence, then like kind of the weight status, right? The kids who are more active are slimmer. The kids who are less active might have a little bit, right? Might be kind of on the heavier side, which we have the big epidemic over the United States. So bring it all together, right? The cognitive benefits, the like, health benefits, right? The slimmer body mass, the better cardiovascular endurance, more flexibility, more muscle strength, and then the, you know, being more, the self-esteem piece that we talked about, right? Like feeling that I have a really great motor competence, but that translates to other areas of kids' life, right? Being more likely to engage with their friends and having, you know, more social connections, right? Because the games and the classes become like, there's friends, there's social connections. So that's why I think it's, again, so important to help kiddos along with their motor skills, because it's not just about being stronger, right? It's about having more friends, feeling better about themselves, engage with other kids in different, you know, either sports or recreation or ballet or dance. It and then it kind of stays throughout their life. You know, there was this study going through all the studies. There was this study about girls who were 6 years old, and they were divided into groups. The girls who had like were really good at motor skills, and the girls who were less good at like a kind of they chose two ends of the spectrum. Like the middle was cut out, and they followed those girls over 20 years. And the girls who have felt really good about themselves, who were really strong in sports, continued to be physically active in their 20s. And then the girls who weren't so, you know, that didn't go so good, that didn't feel so good about themselves, were twice less likely to be engaged in any like even like a fitness class, you know, just to, you know, for their own health benefits. They were less likely to engage in them.
I love this. And it's so funny. I've heard this frequently in other domains of like academics. And, you know, you hear girls by the age of, you know, this around the same age where they feel as though they're not as competent in math or the sciences, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And similarly, they lose interest because they don't feel confident. They don't have kind of that perceived ability to do something, even if they do. So even if a boy and a girl are at the exact same kind of place, exactly, the girl can perceive herself. But like, again, as a parent or as a caregiver, like, there are ways in which you can support and empower and kind of help foster that sense of resilience and confidence from a younger age, and then help keep them in the pipeline, help keep them kind of progressing and feeling good. And like you said, it's, you know, it's something that's going to continually build and grow upon. And it's not just for that moment in time. You're really setting them up for a lifetime of movement and activity and wellness and health. And kind of similarly, you know, again, you know, my family, you know, my parents were very supportive of kind of my efforts in movement and soccer and other domains. And I continue to play till this day. And likewise, kind of in the academic domains, you know, I think that many other girls kind of had the concept of like, no, you're not really that good at math and science, or, you know, that there weren't other people who were doing it, and just seeing it and being told like, you can, you know, not only can you, but you're good, you know, like, you are good at this, et cetera. It helped me to continue in the field that I was in. And I'm sure likewise for you to, you know, receive your doctorate and you know, that there weren't, you know, many other, you know, female scientists and kind of progressing, mm-hmm, I'm sure, in the field in a similar manner. So just by having a supportive environment, and I know you built that for your daughters, and they're going on to do incredible things as well. You know, just fostering that, the, you know, the mentality and that sense of, you know,
you can do it, like, you know. And then it's sometimes said, like, I see the kids will come like 3 or 4 years, like, say like, I can do it. It's like, no, well, you can, let's break it down into pieces. I won't say to them in that way, right, but break this activity into smaller pieces in my head, like, okay, you know, what do we need to work on to get the child to jump? What do we need to work on? And you know, as you've been in the gym, like, all the pediatrics are super supportive, sometimes even too much. Like, you got this, you can do this, you know, like, yay, you did it, right? Like, you want to surround your kids also with coaches, teachers, right, who are the same, right, who are very supportive. Like, we are the cheerleaders, and we're building their self-esteem.
Right. And of course, like, helping them build it in themselves, but through all the different mechanisms that you're describing, so that they're able to recognize it and see it in themselves, you know, because if they don't see it, it's hard to believe it and understand it. So I kind of love that sentiment. And I hadn't heard about all those studies, so thank you for sharing that. Could we maybe talk a little bit, just being mindful of time, but I would love to kind of just address, like, some children obviously have sensory processing. You were talking about motor coordination. Maybe we can kind of come back to that. Like, again, you were describing, you kind of breaking it up into different components. Is that something that everybody can benefit from? Is that something only the children who have delays or potentially a motor coordination type disorder? You know, is it helpful for everybody? Just, you know, trying to understand whether, you know, dependent upon kind of the child and the way in which they process and are able to kind of implement things.
So, Georgie, just so I understand your question, you were kind of now referring more to sensory processing. How can that support them?
Yeah, like, what are things that, as a parent, I think, like, you were just saying, kind of breaking it down, and that's something that's obviously been instructed to me frequently, you know, like, you're not going to get to throwing a ball perfectly. You know, you first have to have the core strength. You have to, you know, where to place the ball. You need to understand where your hand is in space, you know, so... again, if we took a particular activity or something, that would be helpful to kind of walk through, but understanding that it's not, yes, there's the physicality of it, but there's so many, I think that, like, just the understanding that there's built into what may be perceived as a very simple movement. And some people, it might be super fluid, but for some people, there's like 10 steps that are involved in getting to kind of that end goal.
Love it. No, I got it. So I think, like, let's think about, like, this process of throwing a ball forward, right? And then, again, the peak of the mountain will be like a baseball pitcher, right? When they, like, that's kind of the goal, not goal for everybody, but, like, that's a possibility, right? But where do we start, right? as I said earlier, like a lot of those tests for motor development have ball skills, like can the child throw, can they catch? But if they never practice or never held it, let's say, let's just focus on a little tennis ball, right? If they never had one at home, how would they know? So it's very cute when you give a child the ball for the first time, they just kind of have it and just like go.
Backward.
Oh, bro! And they go. And it's exactly what you said, Rachel. There is a building blocks to even that movement. And then the phases of development of the throw. So we would break it down, right? Like I would demonstrate and say, like, look what I do. Like I sort of put it back and then we go throw. So that's one piece, kind of showing and demonstrating. But then again, like just to throw in a space, like that's not exciting. So I might put like maybe 3 bowling pins and, you know, at front of the child on the bench, just 3 feet away, right? Very short distance. So let's try to knock them down. So then it becomes fun. Now we are not throwing, we are knocking them down, right? And then when we get that, I will be probably moving them further away, right? Creating bigger distance and then creating them maybe more space out. So that it's not as easy to hit them. And then that's kind of how you look at the progression. You're looking at this, is the child now winding up the arm up? Are they releasing forward? So those are all the building blocks of that pitcher throw that happens years later. But what we're looking at the quality of movement. We're looking, right, do they have enough balance, right, to call their balance when they throw a ball, or are they going to fall? So that, as you said, core strength, balance, motor planning, visual focus, right? Visual perception, like are they seeing the target, right? Organizing their eyes, the hand, so the eye, right hand eye coordination. And then so that's a kind of crazy and thing about PT, right? Like once they get good something, we make it hard again, right? Like the target always moves away. But again, like, oh, look, you got this. Okay, let's put them a little further. Let's see if you can get them.
Right. But giving them those small gains along the way so that they're seeing, like, I can do it.
Yeah, right. You're not
celebrating the wins along the way.
Getting their targets, right? Like,
you're not going to being a professional baseball player overnight. Let's start.
No, but I'm also not placing the cons, like, you know, too far, right? That it cannot be successful. I place them in a way that maybe on the 5th trial they will get it, right? And they feel really good about themselves. And then when we get it like a few times in a row, said, oh, right, look, you did so great. Let's put them a little further and see if we can do it now, right? Like, so you're just changing a little bit of the environment slowly to create more distance and more precision, right? Because it's really, at the end of the day, like throwing a ball, it's about power. How far can you throw it? Or how good you are at the precision, right? Can you hit the target?
Right.
But exactly how I said, we're building on those little steps. And again, it's like tiny mini mountain and within the mountain, right? And we're building on those little components of throwing slowly through every step, building their self-esteem. As we said, like they feel good about themselves because they got it. So their perceived motor competence, right? It's growing.
Yeah.
And then we make it only a little harder, not a lot of harder, right? Just a little bit more. So then again, after a few trials, they will get it. And they again feel accomplished. So slowly increasing difficulty with time. Like, and then, you know, it's a thing you've seen it too. Like it's kind of, I think pediatric physical therapists, occupational therapists, we kind of like don't think much about, but like innate how we kind of structure the activity that it's, you know, attainable, but it's always like this edge of difficulty, but being able to get it, you know, we always kind of walk on that little edge of accomplishment, but like feeling good about it was worth it, right? It wasn't easy, but I got it, you know?
Right. You're very gifted at that. I can say firsthand, because it might be they're working on it for, you know, and you know each child's kind of tolerance for frustration. Yeah. And you know how to edge it just a little bit, you know, to get to that point. But before that, they're going to have that complete like frustration tolerance, like, and they collapse. You're keeping them in that so that they were building it. They were feeling accomplished. It didn't feel like you were giving it to them either. Like that they were just like,
right.
You know, kids recognize that, I think, from a very young age, like innately. It's like, I don't know, that was too easy. Like you made that too easy. But it was like, no, I had to work for this a little bit. And, you know, when I did it, I had the sense of accomplishment. So, I love that element also. I wanted to be mindful of time, so I wanted to ask a handful of quick questions, and kind of like in a light, you know, a quicker style. Okay. So just kind of the first thing that comes to mind when we're describing this. So you personally, as a child, what was your favorite play activity?
I was described as a tomboy, so I was definitely like one of the kids who loved to climb trees, and then just running around and getting in trouble.
And then look, you were active and motivated, and then you've gone on to help and support literally like countless other people. So brilliant. If there's one thing you wish parents knew about play, what would it be?
About play. I'm going to say a little different, but like I want parents to really be empowered to be at ease putting babies on the floor, right? And then choosing appropriate toys. I often see like parents choose toys that are a little like too simple, or like you want it, again, it's the like edge of motor cognitive development, like having a toy appropriate for the baby's age or child, right? 2-3 year old, the same thing, like having toys to match their level of cognitive development of, fine motor skills to kind of, again, be choosing a toy for play that also is challenging in the cognitive way.
I love that. I shouldn't be derailing us, but I do want to just share because it brought it up for me as you described that. So I had my first child. I had, quite a bit of postpartum anxiety. And I remember being afraid to put her on the ground, like without me being like, very close and kind of aware of it. And I remember seeing another mom who just like second time mom put the child on the floor. Child's thriving. Child's great. Like child can't go anywhere. Child cannot, so 100% safe. Like, and I, intellectually, I think me seeing it in another parent kind of like, unlocked it in me. And then I had a second child and a third child. And, by then I was like, yeah, this is great. This is like, one, not only is this like good for me, this is great for you too. Like you're good. You're safe. You're moving, you're developing, you're exploring other kids on the floor too, et cetera. So I do think like like you just said, like it's safe. Obviously you're aware of their age and their stage and when it might not be, and you have to put up other precautions, et cetera. But, then not only is it safe, but it's so developmentally supportive of their growth and the development of the child.
I think the big piece is that like we don't need to spend like thousands of dollars, on like really complicated swings or, like equipment things. Like the best place for them really is on the mat, playing. But that's where they get stronger.
Yes. So speaking of, you don't necessarily need all these toys. Is there an item in the house that's not considered a toy that you think makes a great toy?
Wooden spoons and pods.
I knew it.
You can make a drum, and it's fascinating because you might have this like toy with tons of like lights, and they will still love playing with the wooden spoon, right? Yes. Or some kind of kitchen device that it's safe, of course, but like something from the kitchen that will love.
Yeah. My mom always, it's funny, I remember even from the time I was like, anytime a little baby came to our house, my mom would always just put pots, pans, and wooden spoons on the floor. Like that was her go-to. She was also in, special education and child development, and likewise had the understanding that you did, like, this is great. This is a great toy for them. They're having a blast. All right. Is there anything else you want to share with the audience before we go?
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was so much fun, Rachel, because what I want to share, like, I think I just want to, I want to share with parents, like, my passion for it and also how important it is, even though maybe comparing to, as you said, like, intellectual, growth, school, like, the motor skills are foundation for all the other, all the other, right, domains of child's life. And it can only enhance the other domains if you keep your child busy. So, really, again, having fun, keeping the whole family busy, like you said, like making the family thing. Everybody goes biking, right? Let's all go on a hike. Let's all go to the playground. Let's all go to the like water park, right? Just minimizing time on the couch, and elaborate to your example of using video games, but to be active, right? Like the there used to be Wii like years ago, right? Now is the other games, but even using the computer to even, something they just said to parents, like have the child stand and watch the game. Like, at least you're getting that, or stand on one foot and balance and watch the whatever game you're doing. So just keeping them, minimizing the time, just being like passive sitters on the couch, and then maximizing the time being active, having fun with friends and family. I think it's the big message. And understanding it's not just about today, but it's about like who they become in the future as young adults or adults. You're just helping them become an active adult throughout the lifespan.
I can't thank you enough for being here. I don't know if I shared it at the lead, but basically the podcast is me bringing on brilliant experts within the domain of helping support children's development through various mechanisms of play. And obviously your specialty being within kind of the physical activity domain. And again, how all of it's interrelated and supporting a child's development, and that there are fun and enriching and engaging ways you can do it. And like, you have dedicated your entire life to this and doing it in such a beautiful and thoughtful way. And you were so impactful for me and my entire, like, you started us off on the journey, right? And it could have been derailed and it could have been way more challenging. And, you know, I had a moment in time that was challenging and hard for me. And not only did you make it not feel scary, not feel overwhelming, but like joyful. It was like, I loved coming there. And I feel so grateful that there are people.
I love when families come. I love when parents come, you know, and also nannies, right? We want nannies to come as well, because we want them to use the same.
All the people
that we teach them, right? We want them to use that, what they taking care of the kids during the day. So right. Like everybody's welcome. And you even brought your parents. I remember your parents coming.
You know, there's a community around them, and I want my kids to be supported by so many wonderful caregivers. And to your point, it's like, everyone needs to know. Everyone needs to understand that. And that's part of, you know, kind of having this podcast is getting the information out. You know, you have so much expertise and you are able to just kind of share a lot of information that is so tangible, so actionable, so doable. And so I'm just eternally grateful. And thank you for everything, Magda.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to our sponsor, EduShapes, page. And you can check out their website and Instagram for more information.